Iraq's powerful Shiite leader, Muqtada al-Sadr, announces he's quitting politics. This triggers violent protests and demands for new elections. But is there another reason for Sadr's announcement? And can anything contain months of political unrest? This is Inside Story. Hello there and welcome to the programme. I'm Nick Clark. So, after days of violent protests and fighting, Shiite leader Muqtada al-Sadr has called on his supporters to leave Baghdad's green zone. The unrest was triggered by him announcing that he's quitting politics. They battled Iraqi security forces and rival Shiite factions near government buildings and embassies. Dozens of people were killed. Sadr is one of Iraq's most important figures, wielding enormous influence over many aspects of public life. He denies any involvement in the violence. Laura Burden-Manley has this report.
After 2 days of violence, Baghdad's heavily fortified green zone is emptying of protesters. A sharp contrast to earlier scenes. Violence broke out on Monday when powerful Shiite leader Muqtada al-Sadr announced he would quit politics. A day later, he apologised and called on his supporters to stand down and go home.
There are some brutal militias, but the Sadrist shouldn't be vulgar. I still believe that my supporters are disciplined. That's why if you don't withdraw from the parliament within 60 minutes, I am not going to be the Sadrist movement leader again. I don't even want you to stage a peaceful demonstration.
It's not the first time Sadr supporters have forced their way into the presidential compound. They've been demonstrating for months.
This is a political rivalry between two different parties or sides of the spectrum. One side trying to maintain the consensus agreement of the consultational democracy, Impulse 2003 Iraq, and the other side, which is the Sadrist movement, trying to revamp the political system in Iraq.
His party won the most parliament seats in elections in October, but failed to form a majority coalition. Sadr may have told his supporters to stand down, but with such intense rivalry at the heart of Iraqi politics, there are fears it's only a matter of time before chaos and bloodshed is repeated. Laura Burden-Manley for Inside Story, Al Jazeera.
Well, Muqtada al-Sadr rose to prominence after the end of Saddam Hussein's leadership back in 2003. He's against any foreign interference in Iraqi politics. His supporters mainly hail from the poorest sectors of society who've been historically shut out of the political system. Sadr's movement won the most seats in parliamentary elections in October 2021, eclipsing rival Shiite political parties backed by Iran. But after months of failing to form a government, Sadr ordered his MPs to resign in June. A month later, his supporters occupied parliament and demanded the removal of what they call corrupt politicians. So let's bring in our guest in Baghdad. We have Ahmed Rushdi, a senior foreign policy advisor to the Iraqi parliament and the director of House of Iraqi Expertise Foundation. In Washington, D.C., Bilal Wahab, a Wagner Fellow at the Washington Institute and a former faculty member at the American University of Iraq. Soleimani, and in Doha, Zaidon Al-Kanani, a non-resident fellow at the Arab Center, Washington, D.C., and a Middle East political analyst who we've just heard from in Laura's report. A warm welcome, gentlemen, to you all. Ahmed Rushdi, I'd like to start with you first. So what do you think has been going on here in the past 24 hours or so? How do you assess the events that we've been seeing unfolding in Baghdad?
Well, it's always the same conflict happened after the October elections, and the results that have been announced is that the Sadrists took about 73 seats, and their opponents, the coordination frame, actually has the minority inside the Iraqi parliament. And in one another, a triple alliance happened between the Sadrists, the Sadr movement, and the Sadr MPs and تقدم, which is then become سيادة, which means خميس خنجر and الحلبوسي, plus the KDB eventually had the majority inside the parliament. So at that time, they had the majority inside the parliament. They have a cabinet as a prime minister who is also supportive of them. They have the speaker who is also inside the alliance, Mr. Mohamed Al-Halbousi, and also his vice, Hakim Zami, who belongs also to the Sadrist. So it's all happened that the real majority, or what they called at that time national majority, controlled the country and tried to manage to have a session to elect a president, and the president should nominate the biggest bloc and order them to nominate a prime minister. Eventually, it didn't happen on that way because the coordination frame actually stopped any action for the parliament. And they, at that time, asked for the dissolution of the parliament and go for early election.
Okay. Okay. Now, let me just want to move it on because there's a lot of background, isn't there? And it's very complex, but we'll try and simplify it if we can. Zaidan, so Al Sadr would have been aware what was likely to happen when he announced his resignation and the violence that would follow, wouldn't he?
Well, it depends on the speculation that we're trying to observe here. There are speculations claiming that the resignation or the public announcement of Sadr to politically resign was as an indirect way or an attempt to escape any accountability from the following actions that would be conducted by the Sadrist movement, and particularly in regards to Saraya Salam, which are the armed wing of the Sadrist movement. However, now after the most recent speech by Sadr, where he denounces any violent actions or any violent involvements by Saraya Salam in the recent clashes between them and the armed wings of the political parties within the coordination framework, that speculation in itself has been countered and contradicted.
What has he achieved by doing what he's done?
Well, so far, he has achieved a rhetoric battle, which is an overarching battle that he has been trying to conduct for many years. And that is the reform revolution sentiment that he's practicing against the political class, despite, as rightfully mentioned by your guest, despite being a major member of that very same political class through various cabinets and parliaments. However, the thing that might be seen that he has indirectly achieved from withdrawing himself from the clashes that have been taking place recently is that he is seen as the man or the strong man who decided to pause or turn off the clashes that were taking place for the betterment of the people's safety.
Right. Okay. So then, Bilal, is it a tactical resignation that he will walk back from, do you think?
He already has. This is not the first time that Sadr threatens with resignation, and definitely not the last time that he reneges on that kind of promise. It was only yesterday that he resigned, and today we see him very active, issuing edicts.
Well, he's still saying he's quitting politics, isn't he?
The nature of his mercurial nature.
He's still saying he's quitting politics, isn't he?
Right, but again, he's a master of he's a wordsmith. So today, for example, he edited what he meant, or he interpreted his own statement as his resignation is not a full resignation from politics. But again, this is not the first time that he does it. He has done it in the past. Sometimes he's even disappeared for months. At one point, he was even living in Iran. But that doesn't mean that Sadr can just pack up and go. He has significant influence and maybe even bigger ambitions.
Okay. Ahmed Rushdie, before we get into what happens next, what the next move is, let's just give ourselves a bit of context. So this whole political system in Iraq was created by the US and its allies after the US-led invasion. And here we are 17 years later in a state of continued political paralysis. Why is it that the political system has not worked?
Because it's based on an ethnic issues and try to separate the country in a way that you should have the power, the political power, you should put the political power in the hands of the majority, and the others should not participate in a way or another. This is first. Secondly, I think the most important achievements that Sayyid Muqtada has already gained is the postponing of the declaration of the Federal Court for its resolution about the dissolving of the parliament. And according to my knowledge, it's always like that. Sayyid Muqtada always withdraw after he will gain what he wants. Now, the people saying to me is that some political agreement happened yesterday, or let's say today at the early mornings, headed by the Marji'iyya in Najaf, the Shia authorities in Najaf, in a way or another, to convince Muqtada that he could take something and he can withdraw his forces. So eventually, Sayyid Muqtada always doing something like that. He knows how to play politics, by the way. He actually made a peaceful demonstrations and start to surrender the parliament. Then he went to the judiciary system and tried to threat them. Then he actually withdraw. And at the end, he actually put a huge pressure yesterday on the judiciary system, and ending with the federal court that withdraw their decision, which means that it was negative for Sayyid Muqtada. At the same time, it looks like there is a political agreement happened between the Sadrist and their opponents which is headed by the Marji'iyya and Najaf. It looks like that.
Okay.
But I think at the end of this day, we know exactly what's happened in those 24 hours.
All right. So Ahmed Rushdie, so does that mean that next up it's more elections?
Well, it means that the conflict will stay there. It does not mean it will end. What we saw yesterday, I think it is the beginning of the real military power of everyone.
If it's not the end of conflict, where are we heading? Is there a chance for all-out civil war here?
Civil war means we are expecting a nationwide conflict which involves at least most of the country's various communities and political groups. It is very clear that this is a political rivalry between very two prominent rivals within the intra-Shia political elitist dispute that has been going on for months, as rightfully mentioned by your guests, over the political stalemate or political deadlock over who will name the prime minister. People and observers have been warning about the armed confrontation that could break out of the political deadlock that has been driven by the Sadrist movement and the coordination framework. But as previously mentioned, with the announcement of Sadr claiming that he does not favor and will not support any violence, particularly violence coming out of his very own movement's side to continue this conflict, will not be praised by him or supported by him, that in itself should reflect towards some stability and calmness within the next few hours, if not within the next few days. However, it seems like the political crisis that has been preventing the country from witnessing a governmental formation will continue, if not, will worsen.
Bilal Wahab, so if it's clear that the political system doesn't work, and I don't think we need any more proof that that's the case, the political system has to change. But how hard will it be to move to a different type of constitution, different type of political system?
I think what you said reflects the public sentiment in Iraq, both at the street level as well as the elite level, that this post-Saddam system of sectarianism has run its course. And I think in part what we see is basically a Shia effort to consolidate power now that they have cowered and cornered the Sunni and the Kurdish communities into the sidelines. In the past, the sectarian system was for the three communities to come together and somehow balance the power, but the Sunni areas have for a while been under ISIS control, and now they are, the ground at least, is being held by militias. And of course, the Kurdistan region that is probably the main Western ally in Iraq has also been marred by internal division on one hand, effort by the two main political parties for basically using this rift within the Shia house for domination at home. So the Shia parties basically see an opportunity, maybe for the first time, to dominate all of Iraq, to roll back decentralization and federalism. And now it's down to who of the two main Shia camps is going to control power in Iraq. And I think this is also Iraqi agency at display, because in past episodes, in post-election episodes, the United States and Iran were the two major powers that nudged Iraq into different directions. But now I think the United States is somehow missing in action, despite having helped a very successful election, but they largely disengaged after the election. And Iran also doesn't want to really agitate, because I think both Washington and Tehran are eyeing returning to the nuclear deal. And I think the result, whether it's Sadr or Maliki, the coordination framework, or the Sadrist current, are going to be in power for Iran, somehow its bread will remain buttered. So this is unfortunately Iraqi agency at display, but they are really playing with fire. But I think also this conflict, the reason why we can see these brinkmanship happening is because, in a way, the international community, two international factors are subsidizing this conflict. One is the high oil prices, which in a way is appeasing the society, because there is enough of a trickle-down economics that's going down to the public. And I think the other is the anti-ISIS international coalition that's at least getting rid of one problem that allows, provides a little bit of a space for the politicians to do this kind of brinkmanship that got really violent yesterday. And it's possible to escalate further, or maybe my hope is that we reach the peak and then from now on we'll be headed toward more de-escalation, be it having early elections, or maybe even looking at constitutional amendments, which is an issue that a lot of people talk about. But I'm not sure that this kind of tense situation is when you want to do a constitutional revisionism.
Right. Ahmed Rushdie, constitutional amendments, is that possible in this current climate?
Well, it depends. It depends on the political agreement that it should be happened those 2 days. I don't think there will be some sort of amendment in a way or another. Maybe there will be some sort of agreement about the early election date, the dissolution of the parliament date. And also the most important thing is that the electoral law and the electoral committee, which is the most important thing, I think, for the Sadrist to do or to work on these issues. Again, I think there some sort of a political agreement, tactical political agreement happened yesterday. All what we saw today from Sayyid Muqtada is already has some sort of a roadmap, escalate, then go to the media and say, okay, guys, it's not my problem now. We should stop that after making some political interest that it's supposed to be in a way to regain more seats in the early elections. And I think the Sadrist is actually looking for 100 seats in the early elections.
All right. But Zaidan, if we are heading for early elections, isn't it just very likely that we're going to get exactly the same results as we had in the past too, which is just division and no process forward at all? And especially given that in the last election, I think it was, what, 43% turnout? It's not likely to be anything more than that next time round, is it? People are just not engaged in the political system in Iraq.
Absolutely. And that is at the core of the objectives and the discourse from the protest movement, that they were focusing on reviving or re-establishing a new political system and not producing or presenting new elections that would have the same influences and powers of the same political interest groups and political parties that will end up finding their way around to negotiate a government following the elections, which is very similar to what the coordination framework has been trying to do with its allies across the spectrum by creating a consensus government and ignores the electoral performance that took place during the elections. Again, going back to the demands of the ordinary Iraqi citizens since the outbreak of the protests in October 2019 until now, the focus has been way wider and way more overarching and bigger than just trying to elect a new government. The focus has been, as you rightfully mentioned, on finding new solutions to amend the constitution, finding new ways to not allow political parties or individuals that have been involved in previous corruption allegations that have been exposed in so many different social and online campaigns by various activists and NGOs for the past few years. Therefore, the thing that people are hoping to witness in Iraq is a new political change that wouldn't involve the same political parties that have been driving and determining this political system. Even if we were to expect a constitution remaking or rewriting, we might even go back to the same problem or to the same problems and issues we faced during the making or the writing of the current constitution in the early stages of the invasion. You still have many of the prominent political figures and parties and interest groups that were involved or at least present or were indirectly playing a vital role in writing some of the problematic articles and clauses in that constitution, most notably the clauses or the articles that were in one way or another paving the way for the ethnic sectarian quota, for the ethnic sectarian quota distribution, which prevented technocratic and independent and qualified lawmakers or politicians to gain the positions based on a roadmap or a program that benefits the country in the long term and not to benefit the interest or the sectarian discourse that is utilized and exploited by the political parties.
Yeah, you make a very interesting point about just, you mentioned the ordinary Iraqi citizen. Bilal, in this political vacuum that the country's experiencing, the economy and people's lives are suffering, and all the while you have this sort of unseemly squabble between what seems to me to be an increasingly unpopular elite. Just tell us a little bit about, briefly if you would, about how it is for the ordinary Iraqi citizen living in Iraq with this political vacuum.
We saw the public grievance and utter disappointment in the political leadership in the protest movement of 2019, which was a truly indigenous and popular uprising, not targeted at one single group or party or sect, but at the entirety of the system, a system that has failed to translate some $10 billion a month of oil revenues into economic prosperity, actually, even to eradicate poverty, let alone prosperity, creating jobs, while you know that the Iraqi political system, because of the competitive nature, every Iraqi citizen through the social media and the competitive TV screens know the size and the level and the name of every corrupt leader and the millions and billions that get siphoned off out of the country. So the public grievance, I think, was at display. And of course, we also saw the viciousness of the system, of the militias, of those in power. They killed 800 protesters in 2019 and wounded, you know, some 20, 25,000 of them just to cling to power. And again, what we see today is, on the one hand, Sadr, who wants to dominate the political scene, the ever larger cake thanks to high oil prices, and of course the coordination framework that's starting to hang on. One is using populism, one is using the deep state, and of course the one factor that's absent is the public. And again, I think the current political elite is really playing with fire by ignoring the public, because in 2019 they were peaceful protests. And again, the ire of civil war that keeps, you know, coming up is always about this militia against that militia. But I think every Iraqi household has at least one or two guns. So the main threat, the main worry, is when the public starts to rise up against both Shia houses, you know, in a kind of a Shakespearean way of a curse on both houses. I think that is the serious risk moving forward, given how aloof and how disregarding the current leadership are of the of the public.
Okay, well, we will watch very closely what happens in the coming days, weeks and months. Gentlemen, we'll have to leave it there. Thanks very much indeed for joining us. Ahmed Rushdie, Bilal Wahab and Zaidan Al-Kinani. Thank you too for watching. You can see this program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJ Inside Story. And you can also join the conversation on Twitter. We are at AJ Inside Story. From me, Nick Clark, and the whole team here, it's goodbye for now.